Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Long time I'm kidding. We just recorded another podcast.
Yeah, this is, as mentioned on the last podcast, this is a double week for everybody. For the season preview stuff, we do try to keep it to its own episode. We don't want to let the other jokes, garbage, and all the other tomfoolery that you're probably used to in, year five of this thing that we've been running now, somehow.
Something like that.
Yeah, Dan and I have been doing this for 5 years at this point, and it's actually improved in a lot of ways. I'd like to thank Lewis for helping finally produce this thing up a little bit. The content's gotten better, I would hope, but the basketball team, maybe not.
I don't know anything about this team, which lends to a great preview podcast. But like, we've seen very little of any of these guys except for Tyus Battle, basically.
Yeah, this is
and Frank Howard. We've seen a bunch of Frank Howard. It's just been very sporadic.
It's been sporadic and very doghousey.
Yes.
Yeah, this team is basically Tyus Battle and the unknowns. If they were going to be a band from, I'd say, a period from like 1956 to like 1972. Like, if you're gonna,
my uncle sang in a band called the Unknowns, and they played like all 50s and 60s standards. So yeah, pretty much.
So yeah, Tyus Battle gets to play frontman at this in this band, and I feel like if he doesn't score at least 17 points a game, we're screwed.
Yeah, he needs a breakout, and that's going to be, I think, the leading. I mean, that's just the most obvious thing to point to. He looked really, I mean, overall, like, I find it hard to really complain about Tyus Battle last year. He was,
yeah, other than the sick games, he was fine.
Yeah, I mean, he has a ton of ability. He was a five-star player coming in, and he showed it in a lot of those games. I think he played, from what I remember at least, he played some really good ball down the stretch when he came up in some big spots. So if he has his natural progression, I think we can be, you know, we'll have a player to be pretty excited about, especially because he was a guy that came in with some, like, maybe one and done, considering we've had so many of them that we didn't totally expect. Like, I wasn't going to be shocked if Battle ended up being one. And now I'm looking, yeah, he ended his year, like, he was fantastic. He had 18 against Duke, 20 against Louisville, 22 against Georgia Tech, 14 at Miami, and then in the NIT, 20 and 17 against Greensboro and Ole Miss. So obviously the results weren't always great, but he played his best ball down the stretch. I was a little nervous that he might jump, considering kind of a disappointing year, plus ability, plus being, you know, wanting to strike when the iron's hot. I'm glad he did not.
We'd have been screwed. Kind of
we would be really bad.
Like, hilariously bad.
And now I think more than anything, we're just, like you said, we're kind of an unknown. So I'm excited to see what Battle can do. I mean, he's all the tools, 6'6". He's, you know, probably not finished as a scorer. I think, obviously, you can always improve your shooting, and there, you know, he's far from a perfect player, but there was a lot to build on from last year. I saw he was like almost 37% three-point shooter. So I think if he has an overall uptick in his game from freshman to sophomore year, he should be right there for one of those probably top two or three all-ACC teams.
Yeah, they kind of snubbed him early, but that's fine. I think there's actually a lot of great returning talent this year. There's a lot of great new talent. Duke, obviously, hoarding that. I would say Joel Berry's hand injury probably opens up a spot, potentially, for somebody like Battle in the All-ACC team. But who knows? I think this is going to be a very weird season around the conference. And that's something we can kind of get into later once we get through some of the Syracuse-related stuff first. Dan, I figure we just kind of look around the roster a little bit, kind of start in the front court maybe, and look through, again, just guys we have no idea what they're going to do, which should be troublesome, but might be all right. I'll just start with Pascal Chukwu, who I think we had higher hopes for last year, and I know the eye injury really kind of derailed him and Syracuse's abilities down low. I know Ben Lammers like kind of abused us last year down low in both Georgia Tech games. I think Chukwu can bounce back, but I think that's still limited to the defensive end and some choice rebounding.
Yeah, I mean, with these, like, 7-2, like, a lot of these project players, it's really hard to project from year to year. We had pretty big hopes for him last year, considering, you know, what we thought was a really talented bunch around him, and he could just kind of focus on the shot blocking and whatnot. So now you would hope that we would get a little bit more going with him on the defensive end, especially because there are so many holes in the front court, considering Taurean Thompson's unexpected departure and just the overall youth of the team at the wing position. So he obviously has tools. He's 7'2", which just they just aren't that many of those guys. And we haven't had very many of guys in the middle of the zone with anywhere near that length. He's been in the system for a few years now, considering he had the transfer year from Providence.
But he's only 228 pounds, which...
Yeah, and that's a concern. And we've seen guys kind of undersized. I mean, not undersized, he's 7'2", but under guys who probably aren't filled out quite as well as you would hope. Play strong in the middle of the zone in kind of spot time. I mean, obviously Taurean Thompson played there a little bit last year, and he was probably maybe a little lighter, honestly, but and obviously nowhere near as tall. We saw Tyler Lydon, who was clearly not a center by mold, but he hung his own in there as well. So this is we haven't had like a natural. This is our starting center. He's going to be in the middle of the zone most of the time, or at least like for 20 plus minutes in a while. And we've relied on some kind of crafty and unconventional solutions for that. So I think it'd be nice to have Chukwu be out there and know that when you have your, best defensive lineup out there, he'll be in the middle of the floor. I think it's going to definitely be wait and see though, because again, like, it's not like we have a ton to go on with him.
Yeah. And I mean, for him, like, this could be very much like a Coleman situation if he starts, and then we'll see what happens from there. I think I do want to wait and see on Dolezal. I think he's a little rough around the edges. That doesn't mean that he's not going to be a very successful player. I think he is, but I think he might need a year. I think where I get very intrigued is then, what somebody like Barama Sidibe can do. He seems like someone who might be able to jump in right away at a position of need again, which is kind of like the center five spot. Syracuse doesn't really have a center necessarily in most cases, just really kind of have a back line of forwards. So again, I'm optimistic that Sidibe can help kind of ease this transition for Chukwu and maybe keep Chukwu a little more defensive focused. Sidibe might be able to be a little more of an offensive weapon and, a more long-term solution at the position.
Yeah, he obviously doesn't have the size, but I think he's probably more of your classic prospect in terms of, he played at St. Benedict's. He was a double-double guy, kind of a double-double machine there, averaging 15 and 11. He's not 7'2", he's 6'10". He's more of like what we've seen out of the Syracuse fours and fives in recent years.
It's probably what you're going to see more of in general around basketball, too. I mean, NBA level, everybody's going positionless. And you're seeing a lot of teams excel with that. I mean, Milwaukee, Minnesota, Golden State, obviously. Like, I would assume that we see less and less of the 7'2 types like Chukwu and more types like Sidibe, who's hanging around 6'10", and I'd say 205, and maybe he gets up before he leaves Syracuse to 225.
Right, and you need him to, in the NBA especially, because there's so much of a focus on spreading the floor, it requires a lot more of your centers or you get rid of the center, and we see the Golden State Warriors run out Kevin Durant or Draymond Green of the five, and that would have been unheard of probably 5 years ago. Your typical 7'2" defense first player is kind of out of vogue at the Nets level. I think there is still room for him in college because you just don't have these crazy teams where you have shooters at every position. And if you do, you don't have guys like Kevin Durant who are 7 feet tall, or at least very close to 7 feet tall, and stepping out and being able to shoot the ball while also playing solid defense in the middle. So when he needs to, so I think when you have a 7'2" guy, I think there is still some potential there to find mismatches and to have something that most other teams don't have like great answers for. But college basketball is also moving in a similar direction if there's just a little bit less of a total focus on that, because obviously the Warriors have kind of reinvented what the NFL game looks like.
In the NBA game?
Did I say NFL?
You did.
Yes, the NBA game.
Pascal Chukwu, if you want to play tight end, you can. Actually, why don't we think about that? If Chukwu was a better offensive weapon, I would say, why not just give him a shot on the football team?
I mean, I think Babe Ruth would probably love to throw some fades to him. Why not?
That'd be a lot of fun. Maybe you'd use him like we wanted Custis to be used this entire time.
Yep. We've probably got a couple weeks without a Custis mention, so yes, there it is. We're still out here on Custis Island, even though the island is like a couple grains of sand floating above the water somewhere.
Jeez. yeah, back to basketball. Another name that I don't want to just gloss... Well, two names I don't want to gloss over. One of them is returning, but we didn't see him at all last year. Matthew Moyer, who is now a redshirt freshman, was injured last year. Probably could have used him, to be honest, by the end of the year, but nonetheless, he seems fully recovered, ready to go. I think he's actually going to dictate how successful we can be on the defensive end in particular, but offensively, I think he's a prime candidate to be that second scorer that Tyus Battle is going to need to actually help lead this team to more than just a handful of victories.
Yeah, I think he's, obviously we haven't seen him play for Syracuse yet, but he came in with pretty high accolades. He wasn't like, a huge five-star type guy, but he's still a blue-chip recruit. Really smart kid. He was I think we can all take like weird pride in, bringing in guys with unique backgrounds, and he was a first chair violinist or cellist? I forget which.
One of those.
And he like honor society kid. So he's, I think if anyone could use a full year to sit and learn and adjust to the college game and kind of take your lumps considering his injuries, obviously I think he would have wanted to play, but I trust that Moyer definitely spent the best of his time. And he was a big time recruit coming in. So he has ability. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. And because this front line is basically all new guys, aside from maybe a little bit of time with Battle on the wing and whatever we got from Chukwu last year, which is not much considering his injuries, you're going to need Moyer and a couple of these other guys to step up just by pure necessity. And I think the other guy is probably O'Shea Brissett, who I'm sure we're getting to. Those two we haven't seen either, but they both come in with some decent prospects. I think Brissett seems to be the guy that's getting like he's going to be the breakout player that we didn't quite know that we definitely have this year. Hype, obviously, we have to see it first, but I'd say if anything, like there's so much intrigue just because I feel like we usually have at least a decent sense of what a Syracuse basketball team will be, even if there are a lot of replacements because of you know what guys were as recruits and other and. Even now, like, Brissett was from Canada, and Dolezal is from Europe, and Moyer's been out a year, and Sidibe, he's played in Jersey, but he wasn't, like, a huge, huge name. So it's even in terms of the recruits coming in, there's just a lot of mystery out there, and a lot of these guys are going to be thrust into early playing time.
Yeah, which, you know what, like, we've said this before, I think Jim Boeheim's kind of risen to the challenge of what seems like a new chapter of Syracuse basketball here, and he's almost been re-energized and he's got a second wind in terms of turning this team into something. I think this is gonna be one of his biggest probably unknowns since he's taken over the squad, and again that's decades upon decades of experience now, but I think it has the potential to be one of his more entertaining just in terms of providing not uncertainty but providing a bit of a wild card aspect to every night. Like, that's just not something that we're used to. I know a lot of folks around the country have already said this is pretty much his like most inexperienced team he's ever had. I'm willing to roll the dice, at least right now, with guys like Moyer and guys like Sidibe and of course, guys like Brissett, who, as you mentioned, we are getting to as we close out kind of the front court situation. Brissett has gotten a lot of press. He's a super athletic guy. He's played very well in Canada. Definitely seems like someone who could become a scorer. Like, if Moyer is going to turn himself into more of a defensive player, and maybe that is the case, who knows? Brissett could easily be, the counter to that, and not really give up on the defensive end either. I know the one issue we had with Torian Thompson was just how he didn't. He just didn't really rise to the occasion on defense, but you were willing to accept it because he excelled on offense. I think Brissett's a much more balanced player. I think Moyer is too, but Brissett just seems like a more dynamic and I think kind of big play scorer than Moyer is. That doesn't mean that there's not going to be ample opportunity for both to really show themselves this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be plenty of minutes to go around. It's not like we have anyone sitting there taking up time because they've been established. It's kind of a mash unit of guys that we don't know anything about, aside from, again, Tyus Battle. I guess Geno Thorpe by default. Like, I guess we know something about him. It just wasn't at Syracuse. But he'll obviously be big if Syracuse is to contend this year as well as one of the few veterans coming into the program.
Yeah, and perhaps Geno, and this is a good segue, I guess. Geno, the big thing is going to be, I think, first and foremost, whether or not he's healthy. That ankle sprain news that Jim Boeheim shared at ACC Media Day was a little unsettling. We do have a little more depth at guard, though I wouldn't say it's a ton. And again, the experience level is minimal at best. I think Geno, it seems like he's playing well defensively in practice, which is good. I think that's something that at least I noticed when he came aboard. It seemed like everybody was very, very concerned about the defensive end of things. But because he's been there all summer and all the freshmen have been there all summer, I'd say like the concerns for everybody looking at Thorpe, and again, all the freshmen, looking at them and even Moyer, who, again, didn't get to play last year, like, these guys have actually been playing together now for a few months, which is not something you see all the time, and Boeheim touched on this, that, like, the program doesn't push for it, they don't ask kids to do that, but all of them did show up, and all of them got to really, you know, get some work in and get into the system now, where they're a few months further along than they would be otherwise, and that was really one of the biggest issues last year. You know, after the hot start, for us, I think, you know, things kind of fell apart for a good, like, several-week stretch, and a lot of that was just because the unfamiliarity of it all and the tendencies that need to get broken. I think with this group, being able to hit the ground running this summer has the potential to really, you know, allow us to maybe defy some expectations, at least early on.
Yeah, I mean, that was a nice thing for Thorpe getting in early. I can't remember exactly when he committed, but compared to like when Andrew White,
which
I
think was the last possible day to commit.
Yeah, it was crazy how long he took. And obviously White had some really good moments last year and was a consistent player. But it's not easy to just come in and pick up the zone and pick a gel with your teammates and get that chemistry that's needed. And then throw in our other transfer, John Dillon, who had a couple of like huge, like all-time moments, but also was never really a defensive fit, which made it hard for him to play in a lot of crucial moments. Like, he would either play a ton because he was lighting it up offensively, or you know, he was kind of a liability, so you couldn't keep him out there. Thorpe, I know, like, defensively doesn't have the greatest reputation, but he is 6'3". He fits the bill a little bit more, at least in terms of his size profile, at the top of the zone. And he's a very capable offensive player, who should at least, at worst, I mean, he's not going to start right away, I assume, unless, but between the health and the fact that Frank Howard is just kind of the established guy, for better or worse.
Seems better right now, based on Jim Boeheim seemed complimentary. Frank seems confident.
I hope so. I need to see it with him. I hope so. I mean, he's been here for a long time now, so you would hope that it would click eventually. And he has had some good moments. Like, he's looked the part at times, and then he's just gotten so buried and so
doghouse.
Just had some games. Yeah, I mean, between the doghouse and I don't know if it's a confidence thing, but he's just disappeared for such long stretches. But hopefully, I mean, if it all clicks, then we have a very interesting backcourt, because Battle's a potential star. Howard is a veteran, at least the closest thing to a veteran we have in this program right now. And Thorpe is a guy who's played big-time collegiate minutes. He's a double-digit scorer at USF, and it's, you know, decent competition in the AAC. If that's our bench guy and he's coming in and he can give us double-digit points off the bench and he's, you know, roughly just a shade under 40% three-point shooter and can play at least capable defense and both guard positions, I think that's a nice player to have.
Yeah, you know, another thing, Geno, it brings up, like, an interesting point here, and, you know, we can tie in, I guess, not as much White, but you can tie in Gillen. Like, are John Gillen and Geno Thorpe, like, this new kind of player, like this college globetrotter, like a guy who just manages to upgrade his situation year after year? Because it seems like the two of them had that in common, at least, in that, you know, they showed an ability to score, an ability to pass the basketball, but were able to, like, upgrade their college situation, you know, year after year. And this being Syracuse being the third stop for both of those guys, I do wonder if that's you've seen it a little bit around the country, but I wonder if this is turning into a little bit of like a niche not for Syracuse necessarily, but just in general, like guards who manage to make that like year over year leap repeatedly.
Yeah, I think it's a little different with Gillen because he kind of went from like, what was his first school? I can't remember.
Arkansas Little Rock, or did he go from Arkansas Little Rock to Colorado State?
It was Arkansas Little Rock, or whatever school it was, and then Colorado State, and then Syracuse. So he kind of climbed the rank more. I mean, I guess you could argue between Penn State and USF for Thorpe. I guess Penn State by default is the bigger program playing in the Big Ten.
But it's also been garbage for upwards of 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, they occasionally flirt with like the NIT. It seemed like he just wanted probably more of a role. He played 24 minutes at Penn State his sophomore year. Average 8 points, so it wasn't like he wasn't playing.
Right.
And a Pittsburgh guy, so it wasn't like he was going back closer to home. I think he just probably wanted a bigger profile. But yeah, overall, I mean, you definitely do see more of these double transfers, and people complain about it. I don't care. Like, I just really do not care about players, you know. If they want to stay at the same place all 4 years, that's great, but they should be able to do whatever they want. So, and if Syracuse can take advantage, then more power to them.
Yeah, and we have a lot lately. I know there's, there's a couple transfers on this team alone. And in Thorpe, in Chukwu, who people probably forget at this point that he was a transfer as well last year.
That's why we've only won, because we've just lost Torian Thompson, who if we had, we would be in a much more, I think we'd be a lot more confident about what this team is, considering he would probably be the second best player on it.
I would have to agree there. So we talked a little bit about Battle, and I think we can get back to him. Thorpe, I know we covered. Frank Howard, Jim Boeheim did mention that he sees a little bit of Scoop Jardine in him. I don't know if he actually does or if that's just an easy reference point for folks, especially when you're at ACC Media Day. No matter how many years we've been in the conference, it just seems like they're just tough to get on board with Syracuse in some ways. So maybe it was just an easy reference point for folks to say, oh, yeah, I remember Scoop, and then like compare, because I do think their games are super different. But I do like what I'm hearing about Frank, and I do like the upside that he presents. And now that he's not necessarily having somebody breathing down his neck, because I think Howard Washington, and again, someone we'll get to, like, I don't think Howard Washington is necessarily breathing down his neck. Howard might finally be in a comfort zone that he hasn't been previously.
Yeah, I think physically Howard has like all the tools you'd want for a Syracuse point guard. He's athletic. He can get to the rim. He's shown a decent shot before. He's good court vision. It's just the consistency that's a problem. He's big. I mean, he sits at 5. He's a big guard at the top, which I always am partial to. And last year we gave him the shot, and he really didn't win it for a myriad of reasons. I think it probably is good that Boeheim, he's the guy. Like, there just aren't – maybe Thorpe takes over for him if he can't do it, but I like that we're giving him the first shot. I think that could be empowering for him. And he'll have a running mate in Battle like that he knows he can rely on.
Yeah, it actually seem like they're good friends. There's like an actual chemistry there that, yeah, just never happened last year at the guard position because there were too many new guys.
Yeah, because you had White coming in last second. You had Gillen who, you know, it seemed like Gillen bonded pretty well with the guys from like what we've seen on social media and stuff. But, you know, he like on-court chemistry, it's not like he had been playing with them for 3 years. And he was kind of a weird fit, like as I said before, for the system. And obviously, I'll take the 40-point outbursts all day. I'm not complaining about those. But Howard, like, I think on paper, fits really well. I thought he fit really well as a recruit. It's just a matter of getting it from him every day. But if Boeheim's confident in him, I mean, obviously, Boeheim has shown his willingness to not be confident in Frank Howard. So I think, you know, his words probably do have a little extra weight in this one regard. I don't necessarily see the Stoop thing, but just referring to another smooth Syracuse point guard, I think, is fine. But if he's good, I mean, if we get a good Franklin Howard who starts every game, who is, you know, not turning the ball over a ton, who can score in spots but is setting up other guys, and then we can get a nice three-guard rotation with him in Battle, I think that's a pretty interesting group. But he's still a mystery just in terms of his consistency and if we're going to just not lose him from game to game, which obviously happened last year.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, by, I think, midway through the season, he was pretty much a non-factor, and that not an option this year. If it happens, God forbid, at least we do have one other option here, and that's the aforementioned Howard Washington, who, freshman, local-ish, Buffalo, but type of guy that could really round into something for Syracuse. I just don't know if it's this year, and that's not because of a lack of talent. It's just because of a lack of need, which is, again, a good thing in my mind.
I mean, it's going to be the first three guys. I mean, the three quote-unquote veterans first. But, I mean, if Howard Washington's good, then there's no reason to keep him off the court. Like, right. If he can play right away, obviously, is he the one who compared himself to Tyler Ennis earlier this year?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
I mean, I would take that. Obviously, Ennis was the guy coming in. Like, he was a five-star player. He was... we didn't know he'd be quite as awesome as he was that one year, but Washington definitely has less of a weight on his shoulders heading in. But yeah, I mean, if he proves to be good enough to track this rotation, this just seems like a team where Boeheim, like, there's no reason not to get guys out there who are going to play well and try to develop whomever, because I don't know what the ceiling is for this team as currently constructed, but I think if you get a lot of guys playing time and you can kind of develop this roster as a whole, like, this could be an awesome team in a couple of years if guys develop and reach their potential in years 2 and 3, just because it's so young across the board. And Washington's one of those key guys. Like, he's obviously the forwards, like, we kind of need them to step up just because of the numbers. Washington could probably afford to hang back a little bit, and he, you know, maybe by the time that Boeheim cuts his rotation down to the 7 that it always ends up being, we see less of him. But if he's like a diamond in the rough, like, let's toss him out there. Let's see what he can do.
Yeah, I see, why not. So, Dan, who's your starting five if you're looking over this group?
I think we're pretty well established that it's going to be Howard and Battle at the 1 and 2. I think then it'll likely be, it seems like Moyer will start for sure, and then I guess Brissett by default. I'm not sure quite who else would be at that other wing. And then I'm guessing Chukwu will be the starting center most every game, but it depends on whether he gets, like, the early pull, as we saw for early career Fab Mello and Team Christmas, or if he actually ends up being a force. Otherwise, then it wouldn't shock me. It feels like Boeheim's kind of been more willing to change up his starting lineup midway through the year in the last couple, where we've had weird lineups, and then maybe you see a Sidibe, or you see maybe Battle move down to the 3, and we get Thorpe in there. But overall, to start the year, I think it'll be Howard, Battle, Brissett, Moyer, Chukwu.
Yeah, I'd say I'd have to agree there. I think we're going to see some different looks, though, too. Obviously, we're going to see, I think, some situations where it's Battle, Howard, and Thorpe out there, with Battle probably slotting in at the 3. And then I think we see, you know, depending on the situation, like, if we're looking for more offense, maybe it's Brissett over Moyer. If we're looking for more defense, maybe it's Moyer over Brissett. Maybe we go a little bit smaller with Brissett and Moyer playing the 4 and the 5. Maybe Sidibe is going to work in there too, obviously. Like, I think there's a lot of possibilities for this group. And like I said earlier, I think that Boeheim, like, if he's viewing this as an opportunity, and I think he is, there's some real fun chances here to mix up this lineup and give a lot of different looks that we haven't really had the opportunity to do. But again, the counter there is that it's also going to be a lot of inexperience as well.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can't remember a Syracuse team that profiled this way just based on just inexperience, so much inexperience across the board. I guess the last time would probably be 07, which is before my enrollment. So, but obviously those guys were... yeah, but obviously those guys were, like, more known quantities even as recruits.
Right.
And you had other guys who ended up getting hurt, like Diefendorf and Routens that year. An interesting spot. I can't really blame a lot of these the preseason projections that have SU in, like, the bottom half for sure, but, like, between, I think, feel like we're filing between, like, 9 and 12 in almost all the preseason projections, and I really can't blame anyone for doing that, considering what the unknowns of this team are. But yeah, it wouldn't shock me if they're, like, you know, sneakily dangerous. I mean, Boeheim is a Hall of Famer for a reason. I wouldn't be shocked if he's, like, kind of reinvigorated by the whole staff shakeup this year, even if I don't know that we would sign for it. This could be, like, an exciting kind of experiment for him, and he's going to want to prove himself after losing Hopkins and kind of having a lot of doubt on what this program is going after a missed tournament and two pretty up-and-down seasons.
I agree. All right, why don't we dive into the schedule a little bit? You know, we don't have to go game by game for all this crap because too many games. But just look at the non-conference schedule. You got 13 games in here. This is, what, the second to last year we're doing the 18-game ACC schedule. I think both of us have expressed a desire to play less, well, to keep things the way they are, if possible. But it seems that's not going to happen. I'm going to look through quick. Dan, are there any sure losses for you in this non-conference schedule?
Let me go down. Kansas is tough. Yeah, Kansas is always going to be tough, but they roll over a lot of their roster every year now too, not to the same extent that a Duke or a Kentucky does by default. But I mean, they have some big time players. I think they have. Is this the first year that the Mississippi State transfer? I think he's. I'm forgetting his name.
I believe so, yeah.
The point guard, he's coming off of his year off for transferring. I mean, they're just always a loaded... I mean, we talked about in the other podcast, Florida State's, like, just behind that top two group. Like, that's where Kansas is basketball recruiting-wise. Like, they're always going to be an extremely talented bunch and generally a little more veteran. So early on in the season, I think that's a really tough matchup. Although... they did only beat Mizzou in that. I mean, it was a very early season exhibition, but they only beat Mizzou, who has been pretty bad. The fact that they have the number one recruit in the country now, regardless, they beat them by 6. So I don't know what that really says. And that was a weird situation. Just was a late scheduled exhibition for charity. But yeah, I would be very surprised if we beat Kansas.
Yeah, I'm not banking on that, especially away from home. I think that one I'll put as a loss. I'm going to put Maryland as a loss as well. I just think it's too early. Like, if it was a little bit later, I think the guys had a little more time to gel. I think Maryland brings back enough talent where it's just not going to work out for us, unfortunately. I think we beat Georgetown. I think Buffalo, St. Bonaventure, Eastern Michigan. I think we beat UConn, too. So this probably seems overly optimistic, but I'll take 11-2 in the non-conference.
Yeah, we better beat Georgetown. I mean, the fact that they, like, stripped down their schedule, like, everything that they did this year was sending the message that Patrick Ewing thinks that team's pretty terrible. So, despite the fact that we've struggled with them recently, even when they haven't been very good, and it's a rivalry game, so throw out the records or whatever, we better beat Georgetown. UConn should be a bit more of a challenge. It's at MSG in the Jimmy V Classic, but we've played them tough as of late, but they're also, like, their roster's in a weird spot. They haven't responded well to the post national championship years here, so I have hope about that UConn game, although I think both teams are pretty largely unknown. They're probably a little bit more of a known quantity, but it's not like they're, they haven't been recruiting all that well considering the prestige of that program. So I think Kansas is the only one that you, like, put in permanent marker.
Right.
Maryland is pretty well established. That's a really tough team, though it's at the Dome, and, it's early in the year, so a lot's up in the air with all these teams. But otherwise, like, I mean, I don't know a lot about the St. Bonnies and the Oaklands of the world that, are occasionally pretty tricky, but you would hope that Syracuse would be able to pull out all of the rest of the schedule.
Yeah, I mean... like, Texas Southern, I think they made the tournament last year. Oakland's a really good team. Iona's been pretty good, but they lose, like, everybody. Bonnies worry me a little bit. But luckily, I feel like, if the Bonnies game took place, like, when the Iona or the Texas Southern game took place instead, like, I'd be more worried about it. I think we'll know going into that game, like, what we're going to get from Syracuse against the St. Bonaventure.
Yeah, I think that's right. The Bonnies are always tricky because they also, like, get up for the game a lot.
Yeah.
We've seen, like, some really chippy games against the Bonnies. I think we, like, start... I don't think we would play there now anyway, but I believe that's, like, a team that we've refused to play in Olean because of some shenanigans with the fans out there.
Fans, there's the Nut Punch game.
Yep.
All kinds of other... and you know what? Yeah, St. Bonaventure fans are kind of. I know I've talked to a couple St. Bonaventure fans about this, and they are a little chippy about it still. But they definitely want to beat Syracuse. Obviously they want to make the NCAA tournament, but I think that the next most important thing for them is beating Syracuse in non-conference play, which I mean, cool. I'm fine with having a target on our backs, and I'm fine with adding some intrigue to some other games that otherwise lacked it.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. If there's a little more juice for some of those early conference games, that's not the worst thing in the world. But overall, I'm now finally, first of all, Kansas basketball's their athletic site is like super stupid to navigate, and maybe it's that I'm just used to a lot of the sidearm sites, and it doesn't appear that they're sidearm, but like, it took me forever to find the roster. I was talking about Malik Newman earlier, who transferred from Mississippi State. But this roster's really good. So that's gonna be a really brutal one. Devontae Graham's back. Gerald Vick is a kind of a rising player for them. They have Billy Preston, who's a really talented freshman, and
who almost came to Syracuse. At least we thought he would.
Yeah, kind of. I think we kind of fell out of it towards the end, but he was definitely recruited by us. And then I think we're in year like 17 of Svi Mikhailiuk. He was still there, apparently. Huh. Who will occasionally go crazy from three. Okay. So yeah, Kansas is definitely the top game of this non-conference slate. But every other game, like Maryland, is just, you know, they're pretty well established in who they are now. Every other game, I think, is pretty winnable. And if you only lose two in this non-conference, I mean, that's not a bad footing to go on. And that would include picking up two nice ones against UConn and Georgetown, which would make everyone happy.
Yeah, especially given the recent results against them. I would love to grab us some wins against those schools. So looking at the ACC schedule, we're not going to go game by game unless we want to. But I feel, and also, why does SU Athletics have a blacked out Syracuse logo? It's Georgia Tech's logo. That's kind of weird.
I just noticed that as you said it.
Very weird. You know, the early schedule here should really tell us a lot about what this team's capable of, in the ACC at least. You got Vatek, who should be a top half team, if not better. I think some people see them as a fringe top 25. Buzz Williams has been able to really kind of improve that program in a hurry. You got Wake, who should be down due to the fact that John Collins is gone. Notre Dame is a top third team for sure. And then at Virginia, a team that's going to be resetting a little bit. And at Florida State, a team that's going to be faded down. So I feel like I'm going to know a hell of a lot about the Syracuse team after the first five, despite the fact that three of those are on the road. I think that this really does run the gamut. I mean, you don't face the North Carolinas and Dukes of the world, but you're going to face everything else. If Syracuse can get through this stretch at 3-2 or better, I'm going to be pretty, I think, positive about our what we have up ahead of us.
Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of just like kind of middle of the ACC teams here. Vitek might be a little better. Going to Wake is tough. Virginia, like, I still believe that they'll be a really well-coached, tough team to play. Notre Dame is obviously the big one here. I think Notre Dame could be really, really good this year. Yep. Like, it would not shock me if they won the league. They return a lot. Obviously, Bonzi Colson's back, who is done a lot of
good
preseason. Yeah, he's really good. He's a great
finally saw
player.
Him in person last year. So I'm during the ACC tournament in Brooklyn, and I was I mean, he was playing like a man among boys for a lot of that game.
Yeah, he's just like such a – he's a very unique talent, and there are not a lot of guys like him in the college team. I don't know where he goes from there, but for like – Notre Dame's purposes, he's fantastic. So this first five, like you said, a really good barometer, because you're not like throwing yourself at the like big wolves at the top, but it's a lot of teams in the middle, and I don't think any of them are going to be like the dregs of the ACC. I mean, the worst team here is probably Florida State.
Florida
even the
Noles
are never like,
well, they were
super breezy out.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're well coached. I just think they do lose just too much.
Don't tell them. Don't tell Florida State fans they're well coached after the NCAA tournament flame out.
Ooh boy!
they're a fairly consistent competitive team,
right?
And we're on the road there, so that won't be super. That won't be easy by any means.
I feel that. All right, looking down a little bit more. And again, we're not going game by game. We're just kind of grouping these things together. The only thing that concerns, like, of course, the one year that, like, Pitt is just abject garbage and, like, they're going to be one of the worst teams in probably maybe the worst Power 5 team, to be perfectly honest, because they lost everybody with, like, little warning. We faced them twice in an 11-day stretch, which worries me a little bit. Then you got Boston College sandwiched in there. So we should go 3-0 in there. And again, if you start 3-2 or better, if you go 3-0 in this stretch now suddenly you got some momentum. You're, let's say, 6-2 minimum, 7-1 max probably in conference. Like, that's a great, great start for a Syracuse team that a lot of people have questions about.
Yeah, and that's along with what – I mean, how many non-conference sandwiches did we say we had?
I gave us 11-2.
Yeah, it was 11-2. So if you are 17-4 start the year with the heart of the ACC schedule, like, I think that's a really good start, especially for what we think this team's going to be. And then, I mean, you would have to really, really struggle down the stretch to miss out on the tournament, I think, and knock on wood. But none of this has happened yet, so I'm not too worried about jinxing anything. You'd really need a spectacular flameout to not, like, get to, you know, fighting distance of 20 wins and you know, hopefully a couple decent ones there with an improving young team to get back to the tournament. Obviously, you have to prove that you're better than Pitt and BC, which Pitt should be really bad. Like you said, they lost so much, and their program's kind of in shambles right now. BC is just not very good.
They made a terrible goddamn hire.
Yeah, it was really, really bad. I always enjoy those hires that, like, you say that's a really bad hire, and then it just proves itself immediately.
Even, like, more so. Like, even more than we thought it was going to prove itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine that it would turn into this much of a fiasco. I just kind of thought Pitt would be less of a thorn in our side and just kind of decidedly mediocre. They're just like, what is going on there? BC's just not very good, but they've been annoying for us the last couple of years, so you can't just... Unfortunately, can't pencil that in as a win.
People seem to love Kai Bowman and Jerome Robinson for some reason.
Kai Bowman has had his moments.
I mean, they're good, but, like, people are, like, really big fans of them for some reason.
Yeah. I guess when you have known quantities in college basketball, it's always nice to, like, give them some love. But I wouldn't, you know, pencil them in as all ACC performers or anything.
Somebody did.
Is he in these, like, all ACC teams?
Yeah, like, there's, like, a lot of people, like, loving them. I mean, Rothstein did a whole thing about them, too. Like, it just, there's a lot of talk about them, and I'm like, whatever. Like, I know, what was it, Norlander's rankings, where, like, he had us, like, had, like, BC, like, directly below us, and he said the only reason why he had us in the top 100 was because of Boeheim. Like, okay, so BC's suddenly a better program than us? Like, I don't buy that.
Yeah. I think sometimes you're just kind of looking for an interesting angle, and BC might be better, but them even being, like, close to 500 in the ACC would be pretty jarring, even if they have a couple established guys.
Yeah, let's not get carried away. So, not to group too many games together, but these, like, next seven here are really kind of where the schedule gets interesting. Is it seven? Maybe it's eight. Eight. So these next eight games are really where the whole season gets defined. Let's say in a best case scenario, again, you're 6-2, 7-1. Actually, 6-2 is like okay, that could definitely happen. 7-1 is a super optimistic view. But got at Georgia Tech, Virginia, at Louisville, Wake Forest is the next four. Georgia Tech's going to be tough, especially if we're not playing well on the inside. I think Ben Lammers, as was mentioned, is super good. Virginia, I think we'll know what we're getting from them after the previous game. And then you got at Louisville. And Louisville, they're still projected to be a top 20 team. I really think that they could be in a ball of flames at this point. And then Wake Forest, who, again, I think we beat them. And I think the teams we double up on this year are really nice, Virginia aside, because it's great to see in Pitt and BC just be a whole lot of garbage, and especially Pitt just being, you know, just abjectly bad.
Yeah, I think the schedule does work itself out fairly well there. I mean, I think you'll usually sign for getting Wake twice a month. I don't think Wake will be terrible, but they haven't been like one of the upper echelon ACC teams in a while. Pitt and BC, you'll always take twice, I feel like. I mean, not always, but Pitt definitely right now you would, and BC is usually a good bet. Louisville, which who we have once, they're going to be one of the more interesting teams because they have an all-new coaching staff, including former Syracuse. I was made fun of for saying this on Twitter. Syracuse great, Greg Paulus.
He's one of the 10 best quarterbacks we've ever had statistically.
clear sarcasm that not everyone picked up on. I really didn't think I had to, like, make it obvious, but more obvious than it already was. But good for him. Like, that's really cool that he has a pretty prominent assistant coaching job out of nowhere after spending a while at Ohio State under Thad Mata as a video coordinator. But, like, they're talented. Like, they have a lot of very good players. I think if Rick Pitino was there and didn't have all the scandals hanging over them, they'd be a cinch for the tournament and probably, like, a top five or six seed at worst. It's really hard to know how this program's going to react. Like, that they went through, like, all – they're not victims, really. But, like, just all of the scandal aside, like, they've just been through a lot as a group of young players. So it's really impossible to know – how they're going to respond to new coaching, an entire new staff that was thrown together, like a week or two before the season starts.
Right.
After playing a pretty definitive system, like I'm sure that Padgett's going to try to continue like the press and all of the little bit of zone that Pitino throws in and all of his normal nuances. But is he going to be able to do it the same way? Like would a new coach step right in for Boeheim and be able to just run the zone even if he was their assistant for a while? Like,
no, it's not just even the system. It's the adjustments, too. Where Hopkins seemed to fall a little bit short, at least, you know, trying to replicate everything Jim was doing. He didn't want to rock the boat, didn't want to change too much. But he also, the in-game adjustments is just something that you just get with time. And yeah. It's something that Pitino just thrived with. And I don't know if Patch is going to be, no matter how good he is, he's not going to be able to replicate those right away.
Yeah, I mean, say what you want about Pitino. Scandal aside, like, he was one of the very best game coaches. Like, he coached the hell out of a game, and you're not going to have the same ability on the sideline. And Padgett might end up being a great coach. Like, it's a good opportunity for him. But he's not going to be Rick Pitino from day one. I mean, we saw this with Hopkins. Like you said, it wasn't his program, so a little different. Like, Padgett kind of has reign. I mean, he's only the interim, but he has reign to kind of do this how he sees fit and try to win this job. Hopkins did not have that concern, but you're not going to step in and be Rick Pitino on day one. Maybe he gets the most out of this team and they end up being, a top 20 team. Like you said, they talent wise, they probably are. And maybe they hold serve at home. I think we're at Louisville, right? Yeah. We're at the Yum Center on Big Monday.
Oh, joy.
So that's going to be tough either way, but like, it wouldn't shock me if this team just kind of packed it in and some of these guys were just not into what they thought this Louisville experience was going to be, because the program has been hit pretty hard even before this, and now it's just another huge thing that's kind of impending. Like, the story's not even over, which makes it worse. You don't know what the NCAA is going to end up doing, so just a giant, giant cloud hanging over the Louisville team, and it's really hard to know how they'll react because college basketball players are young, and it's kind of an impossible spot for them.
It's true. And yet, like, if Donovan Mitchell was still here, I'd be a little more, like, high on them, obviously, just from not just a talent standpoint, but just an experience level and, who's able to help kind of guide them. Like, they have players. I think they're still a tournament team, assuming they're eligible. But I don't know if they're going to be in the upper echelon that people seem to be projecting them at. So I'd say they probably finish closer to like that 6, 7, 8 spot than like the 3, 4 that people seem to be banking on.
Yep. And then you have a really interesting coaching matchup just for the Syracuse game. I mean, you'll have Boeheim against a rookie head coach. I'll take Boeheim.
Yeah.
I don't know that Syracuse's roster will be up to what Louisville's is if they still have everyone going and they're all, getting at least close to the most they can out of it. But, we've seen Boeheim just pull out some coaching. I don't think he gets enough credit for his in-game coaching. Obviously, there are spots where he hasn't been great, but, like, every year or so, there's a game where he just does made some huge adjustments and really shows off, like, why he's a Hall of Famer. And I think you'll see a pretty glaring difference between him and Padgett, who is taking over at such a weird time and weird spot way before he was projected to be a head coach anywhere.
100%. So, like, without, like, you know, just glossing over the rest of the schedule, like, I think we're going to lose to Miami, North Carolina, and Duke, which is, no matter where we are, I think it's going to send the fan base and a lot of commentators into a tailspin because they are back-to-back-to-back, and I know I mentioned it when the schedule came out. Like, that just sucks. I don't know who we...
That's brutal.
I don't know who we pissed off at in Greensboro. Oh, I know exactly who we pissed off in Greensboro. But
we pissed off Greensboro.
Yeah, we picked off Greensboro, so there's a problem. But yeah, we after a Valentine's Day date against NC State, and again, I feel like we play on Valentine's Day every year, and I'm not sure why. It doesn't really do me any favors, nor anyone else who covers the team or watches the team in any way. But yeah, we got 2 out of 3 on the road in this stretch here, and it's at Miami, then North Carolina 4 days later. Then at least you get, you know, like a 3-day break before Duke. But if we go any better than 1-2 against those teams, I'm going to be elated. Even if we go 1-2, I'm probably going to be elated, to be honest, because I think all three of those teams are potential Final Four contenders.
Yeah, I mean, they're three of the top four teams in the ACC in all likelihood. You steal one, you sign for it, I think, assuming that you're not fighting for your life at that point, which is maybe a bold assumption. But you hope that Syracuse has done enough before this to like look like a, you know, solidly second or third tier ACC team that should make the tournament, and you don't need to steal two of these because that's a really tough road. I guess I'd probably take my chances at Miami.
Yeah. And I mean, and that's a great win. Like, if you're not in already, then that could potentially be what gets you in, because it's a big road victory against what's going to be a top 15 squad.
Yeah, I mean, just because like Miami's not going to be the same home environment as at Duke, or and I just trust UNC a little more. But yeah. Man, that's tough. Hopefully, we don't have to worry too much about going 0-3 there, because that's going to be rough. But if they steal one, I mean, any of those three wins will look really good, assuming these teams play up to expectation.
I would concur. And then the last two, I think we beat BC at BC, and I think we beat Clemson, because I think Clemson, without Blossom game, is so much worse.
Yeah, Blossom game was so underrated for them. And they just, like, they should take a pretty sizable step back. I don't think they're a terribly coached team or anything. I just don't know they're going to have the depth of talent to be great. I see they're projected ahead of us in a couple of these sites, but
sure, whatever.
I just don't. Yeah, I mean, they have some nice players. Reed's fine. Shelton Mitchell's a nice player. They have some ability, but Blossom Dame was like one of the best players in the conference for a couple of years. Very unheralded, but he's like the only reason they were even close to the tournament a couple of these times. So losing him is going to be a jarring adjustment for them, I think.
Yeah. So straw poll here. I got us at 20-11 overall.
Yeah, I'm just going through a count here because I forgot to like actually.
Yeah, no, I hadn't either. I was just kind of like while you were talking, I was just kind of scanning quick.
I think we'll go. Yeah, I think 20-11 probably sounds good. I don't like doing the same exact answer, but I just did it really quickly. I'd say we're between 19 and 21. 20-11 seems good, giving us, you know, a couple decent road wins and probably dropping one or two that, you know, we hope we would get. But like at Georgia Tech, like given how that game played out last year, I think that's a tough one. That's probably one of these like hinge games. But 2011 in the ACC going into the tournament, I feel like that should probably be enough to get into the NCAAs without too much drama, assuming you pick up at least one or two solid wins against like the top 4 or 5 of the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, really, like that 20-11, like that's 9-9 in conference. That assumes like zero upsets. To be honest, that's not going to get you into the tournament. But assuming we probably drop like some stupid game, NC State or Wake Forest, and then I'll trade that with a win at Louisville or at Miami, or potentially at Virginia, like something like that is fine. I do think, though, like looking at the schedule, like the total win number isn't necessarily what's going to get us in this year. Like we really do need to mix it up, because the ACC did us a favor in some ways, is that we're not going to lose face because of the bad games on the schedule that we're going to be able to win. But then it becomes like, okay, like we've seen this a lot lately. Can we not just win the games we're supposed to win? Can we pull off a couple upsets, potentially away from home, that are going to really dictate whether or not we make this tournament? I think that the committee's made it pretty obvious that, you know, winning 20 games or so in the ACC is not going to get you in if you don't have those quality wins, especially away from home, to pair with them.
Go, you guys beat the exact bottom 8 of the league, and I assume that we're not going to do a full year without snagging one against like the top tier programs here, because I mean, virtually every year, even the worst Syracuse teams pick up a big win or two. So, But I mean, I could see this team could also go win like 16 games if things just don't play out. It's just such a crapshoot. I like to try to, you know, believe in Boeheim, and I do think even if this is a bad year, just the total youth and inexperience of what will be almost the entire rotation could pay dividends going forward with a lot of those guys getting experience. But it's more or less uncharted territory with how little we bring back, which isn't great. I would definitely love to have Torian Thompson. I think that would really change things. But it's the hand we've been dealt, so it's at least exciting in the mystery that presents itself here.
Yeah, so Dan, I guess looking at that being the realistic view, like, what is your ceiling for this team? And we're going to have our prediction thread, I think, next week. But, like, what's your ceiling for what this team can do both in the regular season, maybe how far can it go in the ACC tournament, and then how far can it go in the NCAAs?
I feel the ceiling's, like, fairly high. I mean, if you just hit on a couple of these freshmen and battle vaults into, like, an all-ACC caliber player, and you get good play from Howard and from Thorpe, I mean, you could have a pretty strong team. I don't think we're going to be cracking, like, the top four or five of the ACC, but I could see us being a, you know, the sixth or seventh best team in the conference and a pretty dangerous tournament team playing a unique style. Maybe a Sweet 16 team at best, but I also think the variance is super high. So I think the floor is, like, I mean, the floor is this team doesn't make the NIT. So it's definitely the highest variance Syracuse team I think we've had on a full year stale in a long, long time.
Yeah, I'd have to agree there. I think the floor for this team, just based on the non-conference and based on the lesser conference schedule, which, again, good and bad, I think is probably 16, 17 wins is the floor, which is, I mean, that's like the ceiling for some programs, high Boston College. But I think that, yeah, ceiling for this team, though, is probably, even if we hit on the sum of the frosh, I'm going to go with, give me like 24-7 as the ceiling. And then I guess whatever happens from there, like, I'd love to actually win an ACC basketball tournament game for once, since we've yet to do that.
Yeah, we should get on that. Like, it's starting to get, like, kind of comical. I know we missed one of the tournaments, and it's been kind of weird spots, but, like, please, let's get one of those.
Yeah, still dumb. Yeah, I'd love to get a win there, even if we just get one. I don't really care anymore. I just want one. Hopefully I'm there again. Who knows? And then in the tournament, I don't think this team can make it past Sweet 16. Like, that's
yeah,
absolute,
I'd be very
surprised
ceiling. If they're better than that. If they make the NCAA tournament with this team, just heading, I mean, obviously expectations shift during the year, but if this roster as currently constructed gets to the NCAA tournament, I'll have a hard time feeling too disappointed.
Yeah, I would agree there. I think for me, even in season, like, I'll have to keep telling myself a couple times that, like, it's probably fine if we don't make it past Sweet 16.
Yeah, and obviously things change from year. Like, we could say that, and we could be in a Sweet 16 game and then Xavier up three with a minute left, and then I think we would probably feel pretty bad about it.
And then,
but
God damn it, I want to win.
Damn Musketeers. No, but overall, like, I think if this team makes it back to the tournament and shows a lot of development and sets itself up for, you know, adding a pretty well-situated 2018 class coming in with Baisley and company, and obviously the younger Boeheim, I think it would be a pretty solid step forward for this, like, last run of the Boeheim era. So it's a weird rebuild year, which I feel like we haven't had. Even last year with, you know, we brought in grad transfers with the intention of competing right away, and we had really high hopes heading into the season. And it's definitely a different feel, but we'll see how it goes. I'm going to hopefully have pretty real. Hopefully, we'll all have pretty realistic expectations, considering how this is such a young roster, and there's just, you know, it's a really tough league. Get to the tournament, I think that would be a good baseline.
Same, and yeah, you know what, Dan? Despite this being a football and beer podcast, you managed to talk about the basketball team for an hour.
Yeah, I mean, we do talk about Syracuse, so I feel like we should give the basketball program at least half the attention that we give to whatever it was that we talked about last week.
Well, last week, I know we got one positive comment. I I don't really look at the podcast reviews on a week-to-week basis. That's probably a good thing.
I almost want to now, because good lord.
Yeah, just for shits and giggles. Anyway, that was our season preview podcast for the Syracuse men's basketball team, 2017-2018 edition. It should be fun. It should be interesting. It should be unknown, which is not something we've been able to say lately. Again, that could provide its own reward for the I guess optimistic among us.
It'll be something. It's Syracuse basketball, so it will be a lot. I know we'll be invested in whichever way it goes, and there will be overreaction and streaming on the internet, and who doesn't want that?
I'm for it, and I'm so here for it that I even decided to take a vacation in the middle of it because I think you guys can handle yourselves without me, probably. I actually missed the easy games, which, god damn it.
Make sure to give John your clips while he's away.
Oh, God. Anyway, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Noon's An Absolute Podcast. Be sure to rate, review, subscribe, and go orange on Wednesday when they face, I think it's Southern New Hampshire. I was going to say South Hampshire State Online College.
Oh, God. It's so soon.
They pretty much face an online college on Wednesday, so enjoy that.
George.